success, so we turned around to take a look at it. The sight that greeted our eyes was quite beyond what we had expected, because we saw this cloud of boiling dust and debris below us with this tremendous mushroom on top. Beneath that was hidden the ruins of the city of Hiroshima.
This is Commander Frederick L. Ashworth, United States Navy of Wenham, Massachusetts, technical member of the crew in the second atomic bomb raid. Commander Ashworth, give us some of your experiences over the target of Nagasaki.
There was a tremendous suspense and tension as we approached the target, because we had just failed to be able to bomb our primary target. We made our tests as we proceeded into the dropping point. I knew that everything was functioning perfectly. At that time, the bombardier took over. He did an excellent job, for as soon as the bomb was released, there was considerable relief, and I knew when I saw the flash of the explosion that the second atomic bomb had been successfully delivered to the enemy.
This is Major Charles W. Sweeney of Quincy, Massachusetts, pilot of the Great Artiste, the second B-29 to drop an atomic bomb on the Empire. Major Sweeney, give us some of the details of the whole flight.
We were briefed on, of course, a primary and a secondary target, as usual. We took off, and the flight was uneventful except for some weather on the way up. The primary target was located, and we made three runs on it, but were unable to get into it. Commander Ashworth and I held a little conference with the bombardier and the navigator, and we started for the secondary target, which was Nagasaki, at which time the flight engineer told us we had just 1,300 gallons of gasoline left. We picked our route into the secondary target and dropped it on Nagasaki. We were very relieved to have it go, much more relieved when we saw the tremendous flash and knew that it had functioned. At that point, we hit the road for Okinawa, the first petrol station.
This is Captain Theodore J. Van Kirk of Northumberland, Pennsylvania, Colonel Tibbetts, navigator. Captain Van Kirk, what was your feeling when you made your first landfall on the Empire?
Well, I knew when we hit the coast of Japan that we were well on the way to completing a successful mission, and that the new bomb we carried would be a great help in shortening the war.
Dayton, Ohio, a little village called Greenmont Village, right at the edge of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. My stepfather was in the U.S. Army Air Corps. I remember when I was little, we'd stand in the schoolyard and play ball. The airplanes would take off from Wright-Patt, flying very low. And we'd look up and stop what we were doing, drop our bat and our ball, and start jumping up and down and waving. Well, if the pilot was looking down, he'd see those little kids down there waving at him, and he'd dip a wing. It made you feel like something to have a whole airplane dip its wing to you. In 1947, the whole family moved out to Salt Lake City, Utah. It's there that I learned about another airplane called the Enola Gay. It used to fly low over the schoolyards and parks in Salt Lake on its dummy bomb missions. It'd swoop low over the salt flats and land at a little windswept village called Wendover out on the Utah-Nevada line. Well, one day, the Enola Gay and its sister ship, the Boxcar, took off from Utah, and they flew to Tinian Island in the Marianas. And from there, one day, Enola Gay took off and bombed Hiroshima. The next day, the Boxcar bombed Nagasaki. As was the prerogative, and still is, of any commander, you can name your craft whatever you want. Commander Claude Tibbetts, flying the Enola Gay, named the airplane after his mother.
Look out, look out, from your schoolroom window. Look up, young children, from your play. Wave your hand at the shining airplane. Such a beautiful sight is Enola Gay. It's many a mile from the Utah desert to Tinian Island far away. A standing guard by the barbed wire fences that hide the secret of Enola Gay. High above the clouds, in the sunlit silence, so peaceful here I'd like to stay. But there's many a pilot who would swap his pension for a chance to fly Enola Gay. What is that sound? High above my city, I rush outside and search the sky. Now we are running to find the shelters. The air a siren start to cry. What will I say when my children ask me, where was I flying upon that day? With trembling voice, I gave the order to the bombardier of Enola Gay. Look out, from your schoolroom window. Look up, young children, from your play. Your bright young eyes will turn to ashes in the blinding light of Enola Gay. I turn to see the fireball rising. My God, all I can say. I hear a voice within me crying, my mother's name was Enola Gay. Look out, from your schoolroom window. Look up, young children, from your place. Oh, when you see those warplanes flying, each one is named Enola Gay.
The airplane was named after my mother for two reasons. First off, I recognized that that airplane would be famous because in the European operations and even in the Pacific operations, airplanes that did, should we say, outstanding things were basically named after cities, after girlfriends, after states, or whatever it may be. They all had names, and I wanted to be sure that there was no duplication of names. I had never heard my mother's name come from any other source. That's one. Number two, I started out in life as a young fellow going to college. I was going to be a doctor, but I got the bug to fly. Father said, you know, those machines will kill you. And my mother, always in her quiet way, she kind of stood by me, and she finally made the statement. She said, Paul, if you want to fly, you go ahead and do it. You'll be all right. And meaning that I wasn't going to get killed right away. And I got, you know, over the years leading up to that time, particularly in the European war, I began to get in position and lots of times in aerial combat there. And I said, Mom, I hope you're right. And on the basis of that, I felt there's no more appropriate thing to do than to name that airplane Enola Gay.
From your schoolroom window, look up, young children, from your play. Your bright young eyes will turn to ashes in the blinding light of Enola Gay. I turn to see the fireball rising. My God, all I can say. I hear a voice within me crying, my mother's name was Enola Gay. Look out, from your schoolroom window. Look up, young children, from your play. When you see those warplanes flying, each one is named in old again.
And that was Utah Phillips speaking after Paul Tibbetts describing how the aircraft that he and his bomber crew from the 509th Composite flying out of Tinian Island, flying 1,500 miles over the Pacific and then over the island of Honshu, dropping the bomb on Hiroshima, which is in the south of Japan, how the aircraft got its name, Enola Gay, named after his mother, and Utah Phillips describing in very powerful folk song, truly a folk song, how that happened. We're going to move on now. My name is Andrew Phillips, one of the co-producers of this third program in